In Hebrews chapter 9, verse 1 tells us about an old covenant, an old agreement, which had rules and a place for worship here on this earth. Hebrews 9:15 speaks of a new covenant from God that is made possible because Christ died to set people free from sins committed against the commands of the first agreement, the first covenant. In Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27, it says that everyone is going to die once, and then they're going to be judged. And Hebrews 9:28 tells us that Christ was offered as a sacrifice one time to take away the sins of many people, and that he would come a second time to bring salvation to those who are waiting for him. It's a beautiful picture of God's provision and his redemption. Now, in my crazy mind, as I was reading through all of that, in the beginning of Hebrews chapter 1, it's referring to the tabernacle, right? So last night, as I was after the picnic and as I was reviewing my notes, I went in and asked my wife and daughter, I'm like, you know, what do you know about the tabernacle? And they're like, that was it. That was all that we had. So I was thinking about the tabernacle and everything, and it's a temporary place for worship here on the earth. And this place, as it says in verse 2 of Hebrews chapter 9, was inside a tent. So God's people, like 600,000 people plus, wandering around the wilderness in tents. Everybody's got a tent. Any tenting people? Well, are you afraid to admit that you're tenting? Like, if you're a tenter, okay. Tenting people, God bless you, right? Because, like, I find erecting a tent to be one of the most scientifically challenging things that could possibly ever happen. Anybody? I mean, like, it comes with a little pole that all pops together. You got to do slide in a sleeve. It seems like it's rocket science by the time I'm done trying to get it done, right? But these people moved around for 40 years living in a tent, right? And inside of that, at that time, God dwelled with his people in a tent, the tent of the tabernacle, right? And I'm thinking, okay, I refer all the time to the woot doot doo is the crazy part of my brain, you know, that as I'm thinking about this, I'm like, who moved this tent? Who moved? Like, everybody was responsible for their own tent, but who moved God's tent? Now, I actually asked the ushers to do a little special duty today. I don't know exactly how they divided up, but I have several orange cones placed strategically in the church to represent the parts of the tabernacle because it was significant to me. This would involve numbers, and my wife would be like, I'm out. You know, that would be the end of it. But I need two guys up here of the volunteers. Those people whose arms we've twisted, to stand right here at these cones. I've got two cones up here, and there's two cones way in the back where those guys are. Everybody make reference to the guys, the ushers that are back there standing by the cones. This is the size of the tabernacle, right? It consisted of the holy area, which would have been an area 15 feet wide by about 45 feet deep. That's represented by these guys. And then the Holy of Holies would have been another specific part of the tent that would have been 15 by 15. That's represented by these cones. It would have been 15 feet tall, a 15-foot tall tent, right? And outside of this would have been a courtyard that would have been set up. So this courtyard, because I'm a visual kind of guy, would have gone from the corner of the building over there, the corner over there, all the way out like 25 feet into our parking lot. Right? And from this wall right here, all the way back to the last row of parking as you go out the bottom doors and you're outside. Why is this significant? You guys are done. Thank you. I appreciate your help. Why is this significant? Perhaps to you it's not. But I got to be thinking about this, that everybody had a tent, everybody had to move their tent, and then the Levites needed to move God's tent, God's dwelling place. So every time that God said, hey, it's time to move. Let's go, everybody. Everybody's like, okay. And they like pack up their tent and they get ready to move. 600,000 people moving with their tent, right? Who's going on a family vacation with a tent? 600,000 people all moving at the same time with a tent. And the Levites all packing up all of this tabernacle stuff and having to move it, right? And I'm like, whoa. And, you know, again, I've got a crazy mind. You know, I'm like, well, I wonder how much that stuff weighed. I wonder what was involved with that, right? Because anybody moved to a fairly sizable tent, right? You're like, oh, I just go, you know, like whenever you grab a hold of that big canvas thing, whatever, right? This thing's built out of wood, covered with gold, all that. So the best that I can tell, because the research wasn't as thorough as I would like, and the information available, is somewhere between 5,000 and 8,000 pounds of packing up tent and moving it around, right? And they got to do it precisely, right? So I'm thinking about this. Wow, that's all I can think about as I'm thinking about it. It's not really definitive on exactly, you know, what the Hebrew tents were like, but the actual tabernacle, it's laid out in like crazy detail. But the Levites not only had to worry about theirs, but they had to worry about God's. And for 40 years, they were responsible for taking the tent apart and putting it back together. Every board, every socket, every curtain, every cord, every pillar. They were the ones who had to load them up and make sure it made it to the next campsite in the right order at the right time, setting it up and taking it down, setting it up and taking it down. How many times do you want me to do that? Setting it up and taking it down for 40 years. That's what they did, right? And why? When most of us talk about the Levites, we think about priests, right? And it's what's interesting to me is that the priests were only a really small part of the Levitical people, the tribe of Levi, who didn't have a place. God had given them mercifully a place as these guys that would take care of the tabernacle and the temple, right? So what happened was the tribe of Levi can be divided. This is where I lose my wife right now. She's like, I'm start talking about numbers and details. She's like, I'm out. When you get to the practical part, I'll tune back in, right? But it's important to me, right? So as we look at it, there were three sons of Levi: Kohath, Gershon, and Merari, right? And the Kohathites, the Gershonites, and the Merarites come out of that, right? These three groups of people, they were the clans that were responsible for the tabernacle, and every time that it had to move, these guys, again, had to move all of the items that were involved. But if you were from the tribe of the Levites, not just anybody could touch the articles that were inside of the tabernacle. Only the priest could handle those things, right? So there were Levites who never got to even see what, you know, the items of the ark and the other things looked like, because they had to be covered by the priest before anybody else could touch them. And what was the challenge? Well, if you touched them in an unworthy way, what?
Die.
You dead, right? You die. That was the deal. A little stress with your job, maybe, you know? I mean, it's like, holy moly. You know, this is what happens. I'm going to keep doing this. 40 years. They're doing this, right? They're coming and they're setting up and they're tearing down, right? And the Gershonites, each one of them had like a specific area of the tabernacle that they would be doing. So the Kohathites moved only the holy items of the sanctuary after the priests had covered them. The Gershonites took care of things like the curtains and the screens and the coverings of the tabernacle itself. And then the Merarites were responsible for the structural elements of the tabernacle, all the boards, the pillars, the sockets, the bars, and everything that held it together, right? Anybody done the IKEA thing? Anybody, any IKEA people? If you did, you know what I'm talking about, right? They give you a set of instructions, you want it with 9 pieces left over when you're done. Like, I have no idea what these are all about. We'll just live with whatever it was. Or you had it flipped around. You couldn't figure out how. Never mind. That's what IKEA is all about. These guys had a job to do. And here's what was really important. That nothing could happen with the worship of God without these guys fulfilling the duties that they had. And yet nobody got to know. Nobody knew who they were, per se. They were the guys behind the scenes. And Jim and Thea made me think, just because, again, woo doo doo, my brain, right? You know, that got thinking about your grandson Warren, right? He's the performer, he's whatever, but he don't sound so good. Nobody's got anything to watch. If all those guys with those tractors and trailers and those buses don't show up ahead of them, set it all up, get it all set up to so that it's all mic'd right and everything else. You following me? Picking up what I'm putting down right now? These guys were responsible for making the other priest and everybody look good. The priests were the guys that got to get up front and to do the things that they needed to do. And of the Levites, only a small amount of them were priests, and they to be a priest and fulfill your priestly duty, you could only do it from the age of 25 to 50. Why? Well, because in that surrounding outside area of the tabernacle, they were out there killing animals and offering sacrifice all the time, right? We're in Perry County. We're not being censored for YouTube, you know, anything like that. So anybody been involved in butchering anything ever in the room, right? Perry County people? It's a nasty business, right? It's very physical, and it ain't pretty, right? And the Bible talks about the robes of the priests that were out there offering the sacrifices, the blood wicking up onto the robes because of what they were doing. Why were they doing it? Well, because the people were sinful people, and that was the way that God had prescribed for their sins to be taken care of, covered for a while. So how often does that happen? All the time. Like, they were doing this all the time. So they designated, they're like, okay, from 25 to 50, you can hack this. But once you hit 50, all you can do is train other ones, supervise and everything, because this is very serious, serious business, right? So the priest had a really, really demanding job, right? So the priests get, like, this kind of headline kind of position over the other people, because they're the people that are up front. They're like, oh, look at, there wouldn't have been any priest named Billy, but I'm going to throw Billy out there, okay? So, oh, look at Billy up front there, you know, and everything. And all I get to do is just, you know, move that board, you know, or do whatever. And they got to feeling less than. And in fact, before, at the Mount of Sinai, like when Moses had received, after Moses had received the tablets, broke them, created other tablets and everything, God instructs them how to build the tabernacle, right? And as he is doing all of that, and as the people are fulfilling their duties or whatever, Korah, who was a Kohathite, along with Aaron and along with Moses, they all come from the same lineage, from the same dude. They're coming down from this lineage. And Korah says, well, who are you to Moses? That's my paraphrase. Who are you? He didn't actually say that, but kind of like that, right? Well, who are you? Who do you think you are that you get to come here and boss all of us around and stand in front and be that guy? Everybody know about the rebellion of Korah? You read about it in the Old Testament, right? So this guy, along with 250 other leaders and all their families, they all rise up and they're like, you know, in Moses' face. And Moses says, well, tomorrow we'll come back to this place and we're gonna find out, you know, what's what. We'll ask God and what he demands and what's right or whatever. So they all show up the next day. And Korah shows up, who is of the Levitical line, but not a priest, right? Because to be a priest, you actually had to be in the line of Aaron. So he was a Kohathite as well. I know, it's like, but he was also of that line. And he was the only one that, from his lineage, those people could be the actual priests offering sacrifice. Korah was not. He wasn't. But he decided that he should be. Got the feeling his big boy britches, right? That was what was up. And he said that this is what way it's going to be. So they all showed up, and Moses said, okay, let's go ahead and do what we think that needs to be done, and we'll let God decide. You guys remember how the story went? Korah and everybody that was associated with him, all his family, everybody else, the earth opened up and swallowed him up. The earth opened up and swallowed all of them up. I'm going to say, yeah, God kind of showed decisively who, what was his and what was on his side. The 250 other leaders, they all decided that it was okay for them to offer incense. The only people that were allowed to offer incense were those descendants of Aaron and the priest. And so after the earth swallows up all these people from Korah, the 250 guys that are leaders that are showing like how they're all that in a bag of chips, I don't know where the fire comes from, but the Bible says fire comes down and consumes them all, right? Does God have everybody's attention in the nation of Israel right now? maybe. Maybe he does, right? After that, to top it all off, put the little cherry on top of it, God sends a plague, and then 14,000 more Israelites die. Why? Because of rebellion and not being willing to follow what it was that God had set up for them, right? So it causes me to go back and reflect. Who were the guys of the Kohathites, the Gershonites, and the Merarites? Well, they were the guys that moved the temple, that moved the tabernacle. That was their job, right? Without them, no worship of God, no sacrifice, no anything else, right? So it's so many ways the stars of the show were the priests. They interceded. They were the judges. They were the guys that were offering the sacrifices, and they were standing between God and the rest of the Israel. But the rest of the Levites, they were just support guys. They were people that were coming alongside and doing all that. They didn't. I don't think that I've ever, aside from this boring one, ever sat underneath a sermon that talked about any of those guys, the Levites. I don't think I have. This is not really like a big, starry, shiny kind of thing. It doesn't create the most glamorous sermon. But during that study and looking at Korah and everything, it made me think about the average person having a need, and for us to be able to see that the average Levite had a role to play. But it's easy to forget that they were even there or notice them in the first place, because they operated on the sides, in the back. They just did the things that were necessary to do, but they didn't get to be a part of the upfront and all that. The big obvious sitting right in front of me kind of thing was then, well, what was the role and what was it? How important was it? Well, it was so important that the rest of everything that happened about worshiping God couldn't happen. Because in this area that I tried to kind of give you a visual picture of, this 15-foot high tent that sits inside the 75 by 150-foot area, was totally surrounded then on all sides by all the tribes. It was the center of where they lived their lives. And it represented God being the center of their very lives. Who they looked to, who provided for them. Where were they getting their food, everybody? Manna, quail. Where'd they get their water? From a rock, because that's where you normally go to look for water. You know, when you're in the desert, you go to a rock because that's where you expect to be able to find it. That's where we were pumping the water yesterday onto the slippy slide, was coming from a rock. No, it wasn't. You know, you think you're going to go to a stream, but you're going to do something else. God was providing all the time, all the way. And what happened with those people? Well, it just wasn't enough. It wasn't enough for them, right? And then they're like, you know, this manna is perfectly balanced nutrition. All you crunchy people in the that are sitting here today, you know, it was the perfect food, you know, the perfect health food. God provided it right from heaven. It just kind of appeared on the ground every day. And you could scoop it up and you could have all that you wanted to eat for that day, but you couldn't gather for tomorrow unless it was a Sabbath, right? God's provision, complete and amazing, right? So I'm hoping that by now we're drawing some parallels, that the lesson in which I'm hoping has become obvious is this isn't really about the Levitical families and the wandering of the desert that I'm talking about or looking to talk about today. It's about you and it's about me. We don't all get to be priests. And just for all of you very astute theologians that are out there, I recognize 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9, that says you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Yes, we are priests, but all of us don't get to stand up in the front, and all of us don't have the opportunity to be able to speak and quote-unquote shine. By the way, there's not a lot of shining going on. A lot of sweating goes on up here, but not a lot of shining, right, that goes on. Right? But when we're at work in the church, when we're at work, we might not be the focal point. When we're at church, we might not be the upfront focal point. In our social circle, we might not be the upfront big focal point. In our very home, we might not be the focal part of it. We don't get to be the ones that operate front and center, where everyone can see, making obvious and unmistakable contributions to the community that we're a part of, right? Like, look at them. They are so important. They just do so much. Most of us are going to be operating in the background, behind the scenes, and a lot of people might live their entire lives without being aware of what exactly we brought to the table. And that's okay. It's completely okay. Because my Bible says that the body of Christ is joined and knit together by what every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love. And that's Ephesians chapter 4, verse 16. Everybody matters. Everybody in the church matters. Every joint, every part, we all matter. You probably don't know how every joint in your physical body works. Maybe some of you do, but most of us, we just take it for granted, right? It works. Until it doesn't, until it hurts or it doesn't work, then all of a sudden, you know, like we're like, hey, what is that? That feels, that's different. That's a problem. I guarantee you that there are some spiritual joints that you've never heard of, vital contributing members of the body that will never get any kind of really public recognition for what they do, right? Anybody, we just came from being at the park yesterday, and my wife's morally opposed to Jiffy John's and park bathrooms, right? I don't know if anybody else shares in her concern for those things, but my wife's very much against them, right? But you can come to church here and you got a very clean bathroom and you don't have no worries about it. You can always rely on the fact that you can use the potty at church and it's going to, somebody makes that happen. And there's not a whole lot of accolades that get sung for the people that do that. But it's a necessary part of providing for the worship that happens here at New Buffalo Lines Church. Everybody follow me? Every joint, every part, everybody pulling together in a way that contributes. It's okay to be a Kohathite, a Gershonite, or a Merarite. And a lot of us are those people. You're still important. You still have value. You still contribute. And we still need you. So I ask you to please keep doing what it is that you're doing for the Lord on behalf of everybody here at the New Buffalo Lines Church. Your work is definitely needed.